reward those who came relatively on time. And again, we are continuing in our series of shiurim about Tefillas Kelim. So last week in our second part, we discussed various aspects of Tefillas Kelim, and what we ended up with was the tefillah itself. We discussed about the body of water that could be used for Tefillas Kelim. We talked about Hashaka and Zriya and various things about that. We talked about rivers and could rivers be used for Tefillas Kelim. Now, as we go along, so now you have, let's say, a body of water which you can use for Tefillas Kelim. So you got the water, but now you have to be careful about the kli. So as we discussed before, the vessel has to be metal or glass. Okay, so we got that. It has to be something that at one point was owned by a goy. Okay, let's say we have that. So now we have to make sure before we do the tefillah, we have to make sure, the same way when a person uses a mikvah, goes to the mikvah, there cannot be any chatzitzos. This is the last thing we touched on last time. That there can't be anything interrupting between or impeding between the water and the surface of the person. So too with the kli. It has to be that the water touches inside and outside the entire surface of the kli. And therefore, there could be what we call chatzitza. A chatzitza is something that interrupts, that interferes with the water touching the entire kli. We also have a similar idea by tefillin. When a man puts on tefillin, so let's say if he has a cast or something like that, so that could be a problem or other things. So the same thing here, nothing could be interrupting between the water and the kli. Now, what could be these type of things? So we gave some examples last time. It could be dirt, could be rust, or the infamous stickers. So again, as I mentioned last week, I think that nail polish remover, acetone, these type of things could be used to remove stickers. Also, you have the gummy feel, gummy stuff underneath. That underneath, even if you take the sticker off, in other words, if you wouldn't use it that way, you should make sure you remove it. Most people would not want something like that on whatever kli they have. So it's best to make sure you check the kli before. It's not halakhically mandated, but just a good idea before you come to the kelim mikvah, and make sure those things are removed, because instead of sitting there and trying to scrape off the sticker and things like that, So it's best to get rid of them beforehand. And certainly, this is my own thing, certainly do not take the sticker off of the kli and stick it onto the kelim mikvah. That is not a good move. But we're not going to go there for tonight. Now, if you have a kli that you bought from a non-Jew, and it could be the non-Jew used it, so Emir Tashem B'li Nether, the next topic will be how do you kasher a kli. How do you make a kasher? So the halacha is that you're supposed to kasher something before you tovel it. In other words, so if, let's say, you bought something from Mr. and Mrs. Midyan, so then what you have to do is you have to kasher it first. How, under what circumstances, and how do you do that, Meretz Hashem will discuss at some later point, believe the other. And after you've kashered it, then you tovel it. So it should be done in that order. Okay, as we mentioned before, so you have to find the proper body of water. Now, again, so my kli is metal or it's glass, and you bought it from a goy, and now you have the right body of water. So now you're about to tovel it, you have to make a bracha. So we discussed before, sometimes you wouldn't make a bracha, let's say if it's a clay suda, if it's not a clay suda, but let's say not. Let's say it's a fork or a knife or glass or something like that. So again, so we all know before we do a mitzvah, we make a bracha on said mitzvah. Any situation, as I mentioned before, even if it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan, let's say Chanukah licht, make a bracha over a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Again, as I mentioned very often, the bracha does not mess up your mitzvah. So in other words, let's say a man put on tefillin and he didn't make a bracha. So he still gets the mitzvah tefillin, just miss the opportunity to make a bracha on that mitzvah, which is a separate mitzvah. So too here. We have an opportunity to make a bracha over a mitzvah of Tefillas Kelim. So you make a bracha. What's the bracha? So like any other bracha, on a mitzvah, bracha to Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, asher kidshanu b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu al tfilas kelim. Al tfilas kelim. On the immersion of vessels. Okay, so that's al tfilas kelim. Now, the question is, what happens if you only have one vessel? You're immersing only one fork. Let's say you're doing that. One knife, whatever it may be, one glass, whatever the case may be, you're totaling only one thing. So now, what do? Kelim is plural. Hashem, you have commanded us on the immersion of kelim. So some people say, there's a difference of opinion, some people say that even if you total only one thing, you still make a bracha al tefilas kelim, plural, because Hashem, you commanded us on the immersion of vessels. I'm not immersing vessels, I'm immersing a vessel, but Hashem commanded us on that mitzvah. So it'd be plural anyways. Others say, no, you say al tefilas keli, singular form. Again, different people do different things. So that's what you do. So you make the bracha. As you all know, whenever we make a bracha on a mitzvah, it's over lasiyasan, meaning that you make the bracha, then you do the action. You do the bracha, and then you do the action. So the same thing here. Before you tovel the kli, you're supposed to make a bracha. You have to make the bracha first, and that's what you do. Now, as I mentioned before, you have to tovel the whole thing. I mentioned this before. That's why a kelim mikvah sometimes is large, because it might not be just your fork or your knife, but again, could be a caterer's coming or a restaurant's coming, and they have industrial-sized things. And sometimes private people have very large kelim that they have to tovel. So you have to tovel the entire kli, everything, including the handles. A lot of people think you don't have to tovel the handle because the handle doesn't come into direct contact with the food. But that's considered part and parcel of the kli. It's considered one thing. Okay, it might be screwed on, but it's screwed on, and it's considered one vessel. Therefore, you have to tovel the whole thing. You have to tovel the whole thing at the same time. You don't do halvesies on tefilas kelim. We'll see by kashering, you can do halvesies, obviously. But by tefilas kelim, you do the whole thing simultaneously. Now, again, as somebody asked me a couple days ago, you don't have to do it at the same time, but if you have a vessel and it has a lid, has a cover, you have to tovel the lid too. You have to tovel the lid also. So again, you have a pot or something, so you have to tovel the lid also. Now obviously the lid could be done separately, it doesn't have to be done at the same time. In fact, you should do it that way, but you have to tovel the lid too.
Did you ever tell us how to tovel the George Foreman with the...
No, we didn't get to that yet.
Okay.
I don't think so. Okay, now when you're toveling something, we're gonna get back to the problem we just mentioned before, and that is a problem of chatzitza. Meaning that even if you have a perfectly clean vessel, and you're toveling a perfectly clean vessel, you could still, during the tefillah, have two challenges, two different areas of a chatzitza which could arise. The first one is air bubbles. In other words, if you have a kli that has a narrow mouth, so we all know what's going to happen. If you have something with a narrow mouth and you put it into a body of water, wherever it may be. So then what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that the water is going to gush in very quickly, and because of that, could be that an air bubble will result inside. Now, as I said before, you have to total the entire vessel inside and outside. So now if you have an air bubble, so part of the kli will not get totaled on the inside. So how do you remedy that? There's different ways you could remedy that. Either you could... depending on how clear the water is, if you could see the vessel through the water, which sometimes is a challenge, and you see there's an air bubble, which you might know because when you put the vessel into the water, you'll hear it bubbling up. So that would be an indicator that there's an air bubble inside. So if you could see what's going on, you could see an air bubble. So if you sometimes move the vessel around while it's immersed in the water, sometimes the air bubble will burst. Sometimes that might happen. A lot of times it won't. So there's another way to do it. There's another way to take care of this problem of an air bubble. And that is, based upon what I said last week, what we learned last week, whichever way the mikveh is built, whether it's Zriya or Hashaka, one thing we do know, that there has to be some source of tap water close by. Because again, you either have to replenish the water, whichever way you do it. But you need tap water somewhere around the mikveh, somewhere, no matter what it may be. So what you could do is go over before, let's say you're toveling a decanter, or a tea kettle, something along those lines. So now what you could do is go over to wherever the source of the water is, and let's say take the tea kettle or the decanter, fill up the tea kettle or the decanter with tap water. It's completely filled up to the top with tap water. Now, there's no air bubble, right? You're carrying it around because you only filled up the inside. You didn't fill up the outside. So now what do? You go over to the kelim mikvah, and let's say if it's something that requires a bracha, you make the bracha, and then you immerse it into the mikvah. What's going to happen? Since there's water on the inside, water's not going to gust in. So the water's going to completely envelop the outside. And what is it going to do? The mikvah water is going to touch, obviously, once you put it below the surface of the water, it's going to touch the tap water, which is inside the decanter. Now, based upon what we learned last week, as soon as that tap water comes into contact with the kosher mikvah water, the tap water, which is inside, which is mayim shuvim, which is not kosher for a mikvah, comes into contact with the mikvah water, what happens? Presto changeo. And now that water that's inside became mikvah water. So now the outside is enveloped by the original mikvah water, and the water, the tap water that's inside the, whatever it is, the decanter, whatever it may be, the little shot glass, whatever it may be, the salt shaker, the water that's inside that you put inside also becomes mikvah water. And that's how, in most cases, you alleviate the problem. Now, just based upon what we said on the side, what we said last week, now when you take it out of the mikveh, so it's filled with water, I don't want to take home a decanter filled with water. What can you do? Just dump it into the mikveh, right? As soon as you dump it into the mikveh, it's not going to be any different than the water that was in that mikveh anyways, because as you know from last week, that water that was in the mikveh originally was tap water. It just came into contact with rainwater and was converted over, now became mikveh water, right? So the same thing will apply to your water that you're dumping into the mikveh. I don't think they will mind that much because it's clean water, assumingly, and so it doesn't do any harm to the mikveh. So that's the way to alleviate the problem of an air bubble.
So the related problem is the floating pot. You could run into the same kind of problems if you're not careful, and what you're saying would help that also. You put a pot in it,
yeah,
and it floats. So you
That's
play
right.
around with it, you're holding
That's
it.
That's right, it will sink eventually.
And you keep holding it.
But that brings up the other problem. The other way you can have a chatzitza is you. Meaning, this is perfectly clean. Let's just pretend this is a clay. And it doesn't have a big mouth or anything like that. Doesn't speak Lashon Hara or anything like that. So now I'm toveling it into the mikveh, right? Now remember what I said, everything has to touch the surface of the mikveh. Now what's going to happen is people are very worried that they're going to drop things, and people do drop things in the bottom of the mikveh. So what's going to happen when the person tovels it? So now what happens, no matter how you hold it, the area where my fingers are, or the toveler's fingers are, that area, those areas are not touching, are not being touched by the water.
What if you put your hands with mikveh?
Okay, so one second, your daughter came to my class. So so how do you alleviate that problem? So you could let go of it for a second and catch it with the other hand or with the same hand. You could do that. Now that usually works, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you don't catch it and it ends on the bottom of the pool. And also that works for things that are a little bigger. Let's say you're toveling something very small. Let me give you an example. Let's say you have a cooking needle, right? You have some type of bird and you want to stuff the bird with stuffing. That's why they call it stuffing. And you want to sew up the cavity to keep the stuffing on the inside. So people have their special thread so it doesn't disintegrate because of the heat of the oven. And there's also special needles that they use to sew up the bird. So it's metal, comes in direct contact with food. Maybe it's not klesuda, but it has to be totaled. Believe it or not, this is not my idea, but in time of the Beis Hamikdash, which is tumantara, so you can have a needle that becomes tameh. So you have to total the needle. So the Mishnah in Mikvos discusses how you do that. Right? That's a little tricky. Like, how are you going to do that? Because if you have a needle, so basically your finger is going to cover up the almost entire surface of the needle. How are you going to... So you're going to drop it and catch it? Let's see you do that. I mean, you could do that. You could do that, but one of two things are more likely to happen. Either you'll drop it or you'll get pricked by the right trying to catch it. So therefore, how do you do that? So one way is, as I said before, not to hold it tightly and try to drop it and catch it. Okay, so that's not going to work for a needle. The other way is, as you know, in the backyard or usually by most Kalim mikvahs, what they supply is a basket or some type of sow or something like that, so you can use that. But that also works. You have to make sure when you put in the crate or the basket or whatever it is, that things don't float up on the top, which Mr. Cohen was talking about before. Right? You have to worry about that. You also have to make sure that you don't pile up too many things on top of the other, which people unfortunately do, because then, again, the kli will not touch the entire surface because you have it overloaded. But again, that won't work for a needle. So the Mishnah really discusses how you take care of a needle, so I don't want to get into that right now. But the third way, so the first way is not holding it tightly. The second way is with a basket or something like that. The third way is the way, and not everybody agrees with this, but what you could do is wet your hand before with mikvah water. Stick your hand in the mikvah. And then you hold the kli. So now this area has mikvah water on it. And I tovel it. It all touches together. And then it's considered tovel. Now again, there is a little machlokus about this. So it's not the best way. But some poskim, the Rama says this is a way you could do that. Who's calling now? Shouldn't be calling. An unknown caller. Okay. Okay. Now, so that's how you total something. You only have to total something once. Some people have a custom to do it twice, three times. Some people do it twice just because you're scared maybe the first time wasn't good. Again, whatever your custom is fine. Some people do it seven, you know, like there's all sorts of things. But you really only have to total something once. The reason why I bring that up is we'll get to a little later about electrical appliances. So again, that's something to bear in mind. You cannot tovel something on Shabbos or Yontif. You can't tovel something on Shabbos or Yontif. The reason why is, even though there is a machlokas about this, but we do not tovel something on Shabbos or Yontif for a simple reason. And that is because, as I mentioned before, until you tovel something, you're not allowed to use it. You're not allowed to use it. So now, if you tovel something, you can use it now. So it's considered as if you fixed it. As if you fixed it on Shabbos. You know, we all know you're not allowed to fix something on Shabbos. Tikkun mana. You're not allowed to fix it. So it's considered as if you fixed it. It was unusable before. Now it's usable. So therefore, you're not allowed to total something on Shabbos or Yontif. Now there's some leniencies for this, especially on Yontif and especially if it's glass. But again, in general, we don't total something on Shabbos and Yontif. Okay. As I mentioned before, you're not allowed to use a kli even once, and we discussed this when we were talking about disposable things, where this misconception, I think, came from. But if someone used a kli that was not tovel, the food does not become usser. You shouldn't use that kli, eat out of that kli. In other words, you shouldn't use that kli when you're eating, but one trafe up the food, as we call it. One trafe up the food. Okay. Also, some hold that you shouldn't leave a kli that is not toveled a long time in your house. This really applies by anything that's not kosher. You should get it out of the house or toveled as soon as possible. We all know the reason why. It's called Murphy's Law. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. So, you know, you forget, and then it gets into the regular stuff, and then you're using a kli d'asim and toveled. Same thing applies by something that was bought inadvertently that wasn't kosher. So again, you should try to, now again, you don't have to drive yourself crazy, but you should try to get rid of it as quickly as possible because of the obvious reason. If you're not sure whether you toveled something or you did not, the best thing to do is to wait till you have something that you have to tovel. And then tovel the thing you're not sure about together with the thing you for sure have to tovel. The reason why is bracha. Because you don't want to lose the bracha. So in other words, so if I could, again, you have to use your seichel if it's going to be a long time. If it's not going to be too long, or you have something that you have to tovel, like a fork or a knife, something you have to make a bracha on, so you make a bracha on the first thing, and then you have in mind the second thing, which maybe you tovel, maybe you didn't, but you tovel the second thing afterwards. The first bracha that you made on the first thing that definitely needed tefillah will cover the second object. And that brings up something going back a little. Obviously, if you're toveling something and you have a bunch of things to tovel, which usually is the case, not just one fork or one knife, let's say you have a bunch of things to tovel. So when you make the bracha, you should have in mind all things you're going to tovel, and then you tovel everything based upon one bracha. You only have to make one bracha. You don't make a bracha on each and every single thing. Make one bracha and covers everything. That's why, like I said before, it's best if you tovel a bunch of things together, if you have something that you're not sure of, or also if you're toveling something that you have to make a bracha for, you bring along the things that you don't have to make a bracha for. Even if you should for sure don't have to make a bracha for, because still that bracha that you made on the original thing, the fork, the knife, which does have to have tefillah, will help the things that the other things also. Now again, if you're toveling a lot of things, one bracha covers everything, as long as you had everything in mind and as long as you don't interrupt, right? You could talk about, try to minimize it, but you could talk about anything that's pertinent that applies to tefillas kelim, right? Anything that applies to tefillas kelim. But anything that does not apply to tefillas kelim, did the Lakers win tonight? You know, you shouldn't talk about anything that does not have to do with tefillas kelim, because again, one bracha is covering the whole thing, and you want that one bracha that you made originally to cover everything, so you shouldn't interrupt in between anything extraneous.
What if you have a number of things to tovel and somebody else comes up with one thing? Are you allowed to let them in there, or are you not supposed to be interrupting?
No, person? Just for one thing, you know, you could be a Baal Musar and, you know, let the person tovel. Usually it's not such a big problem, because unless it's right before Pesach, usually there's enough room, you know, one person on the side, one, you know, usually there's enough room, you know, to squeeze in.
Is the not talking going with making a bracha? So if you have only things to do toivel that don't require bracha, then
right.
There's no issue.
I mean, again, just because of the mitzvah, you shouldn't be talking about, you know, extraneous things anyways. You should be focused kavanah-wise on the mitzvah also. Alrighty. Now, getting back to the, I think this might be the last thing we'll cover for right now, a short session tonight. Electrical appliances. What do you do about electrical appliances? Now, assuming, again, these are electrical appliances which are metal, are a material which you do have to tovel. So what do you do? Now, of course, we have a lot of these, like a George Foreman. Now, again, we're assuming, as I mentioned in one of the previous shurim, that's a George Foreman that doesn't have removable plates, right? If you have, like I think I told a story when Rami was going away to yeshiva, so he wanted a George Foreman. So he bought him a Hamilton Beach one because those had removable plates. The plates were the only thing that came into contact with the food, and they had removable plates so you could wash them easier, but it makes it easier to tovel because all you have to do is tovel those things. Those are the only things that come into direct contact with food.
Right,
there's a lot of things. I mean, but again, that's not a fun case. Let's talk about a waffle maker, a sandwich maker, or a toaster, an urn, a Shabbos water urn is maybe the best. I mean, mean, we've got tons of these things. I just saw it this week, I think Mrs. Hurt was here, senior, and she was toveling one of those electric hand mixer thingies. Not a mixer, but, you know, like a mixer.
Blender.
A blend. Yeah, but it wasn't a blender. You know, it was one of
them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, like, one of those type of things. So what's the story with those things? So basically, we have a gamut of opinions. Some say that you don't have to tovel it at all. This is a minority opinion, I do have to tell you. You don't have to tovel it at all. The reason why you would not have to tovel it is an interesting rationale, and that is because something is not subject to tum and tara if it's attached to the ground. Again, mm-hmm. except for tsaras, something that's attached to the ground, a house, except again, tsaras is different. A building cannot become tame. Something's tame touched the building. The building does not become tame because it is attached to the ground. So the rationale for this opinion is that, again, an electrical appliance is attached to the ground. How? It has to be plugged in. Now, most opinions don't accept that. Seems like Mr. Cohen doesn't like that one either.
No,
you do like it.
That could be where the expression grounded comes from.
That
where
could
I,
be.
That's
okay. That's probably a proof to this. I don't think it helps halakhically, but another opinion, which many poskim say is okay. Now, this will only help for certain appliances. Is that, let's say, but it will help for an urn. That an urn, as we all know, the electrical is on the bottom. So what you do is you invert the kli and you tovel it upside down, right? Tovel it upside down. So the metal part on the inside all gets toveled. You hold on to the black part, and you don't have to tovel the housing or the base. And you just tovel the part that's going to come to contact with the water or whatever. Just do that and keep the bottom dry. That's the second opinion. Third opinion is you tovel the whole thing. Tovel the whole thing. Now, some people, in fact, I was just discussing this with someone from the Valley just a couple days ago. He said somebody told him, and you wait 24 to 48 hours. I'm usually a little too scared to say that, but I usually say wait a week. And, you know, make sure you dry it up. Now, again, as we said before, you only have to tovel something once, right? So even though it says do not immerse a lot of times means like what we do, but also a lot of times means don't leave it in a pool of water for an extended period of time. So again, the problem is that the wiring on the inside will get wet, and if it gets wet, so then you got a problem if you plug it in, obviously. So again, if you give it a try, if you dry it right away, the outside, then you let it dry out for a week or so, whatever amount of time you want. So then, usually there's not a problem. I'm not taking responsibility if your thing blows up, but usually it's not a problem. Now, somebody who I was speaking to last week said they waited 48 hours and the thing started smoking. So they called somebody else and they said, yeah, it happened to me also. Wait 24 more hours and plug it in again. They did that. They plugged it in after 72 hours or whatever, and they said it was perfectly fine. So again, usually you don't have a problem if you do that. It's easy for me to say this because I haven't had anything like this recently in a long time. There's two other ways that are a little more difficult to get around the electrical appliance issue. Number one is if you know someone who's mechanically inclined, not me, obviously, if they could take it apart. Now, taking apart, we just, in other words, take it apart in a way that someone, an expert, in other words, not just unplugging the plug, or the, right? So then, and they put it back together. We used to have a guy in the show who used to be able to do this, David Axelrod. If you know. So he used to be able to do these type of things. So then, according to many postgame, it would be considered like he built it. He made the kli. And then you have a Jewish person who made the kli. Mr. Cohen, you're mechanically inclined. You could probably do these things. So then that might be a leniency that you wouldn't have to tovel it. Because then a Jew made it, so to speak. A few years ago, there was a very big posek, a renowned posek, a very big Talmud Chacham was in town, and there was a big gathering of Rabbanim, and after it was all over, I went up to this very chashuv posek, and I asked him, well, we tell people about electrical appliances. So it's a very interesting halacha. It is brought down in Shulchan Aruch, that let's say you have a vessel that you need to use on Shabbos, but you forgot to tovel it. We all know how things go, especially on Erev Shabbos. but you need to use it. You have a Sheva Bracha, so whatever it may be. So what do? You have to tovel it. You can't tovel on Shabbos. But on the other hand, you need it. So what do? So Mohammed brings down, you give it to a non-Jew. Say, here, this is yours. It's a gift to you. It's yours. It's completely yours. The guy takes it. Then you ask him, can I borrow it? And then you use it on Shabbos because it's not obligated in Tefillas Kelim. Why? It belongs to a goy. It belongs to a non-Jew. So that is brought down. Now, what this very chashuv rav told me is he tells people for electrical appliances to give it to a goy. To give it to a goy and then borrow it back. So I said, permanently? He said, yeah. So I said, but the Mechaber only brings that down as far as Shabbos. After Shabbos, you take it back from him, and you know, and then you have to tovel it. It's not like an open-ended, permanent solution. So I was a little proud of myself because he didn't answer me. And so I don't know, maybe he had an answer, he was too busy to answer me. But again, usually I tell people one of the other answers. In other words, usually I tell people, tovel the whole thing and have bitachon, which is, again, very nice of me to say, because it's not my thing. And if it blows up, it's not my problem. And I obviously tell them that, as I mentioned in the shiur here tonight, that I don't take any responsibility for it. So it's very magnanimous of me to make that suggestion in halacha when I have nothing to lose. Except for maybe I'll have it, which is a different
issue. Doesn't that approach have the issue of not being able to elevate the food that
right.
Whatever it's going to be used
No, but it doesn't have to be elevated. It's, again, it's because the kli belongs to a goy.
Yeah,
in a Kabbalah aspect, but again, that's not my area of expertise.
Isn't it kashri district?
No, because it's the same thing. Like, I don't know if we have that many of them in Los Angeles, but you could. We did, but I don't know. Maybe there still is. Let's say if you have a restaurant that's owned by a non-Jew, you can have a kosher restaurant owned by a non-Jew, right? You can have that. So, do they have to tovel their vessels? No. No. The truth of the matter is we have that a lot. The truth of the matter is that is most commercially made products, right? I know all these cookies and all these things, right? And Ritz crackers, I don't think Nabisco is a, you know, or any a lot of these companies that make, that have an OU or whatever, you know, any hashgacha, they're owned by non-Jews, right? So one thing that is alleviated is that if there are things that have to be tovled, they don't have to be tovled. Because they're owned by a non-Jew.
Even if they did toil, it wouldn't help because
right.
They're owned by a non-Jew. So
it's irrelevant. Right. So the question is, could we extend that to this case also? In other words, I have a vessel that hasn't been that doesn't belong to me, so to speak. I mean, it does, but it doesn't really. I gave it halakhically, legally to the non-Jew. It belongs to them. And I'm just, quote-unquote, borrowing it. I'm just, quote-unquote, borrowing it. So question is, so on Shabbos you could do that, but the question is, could we extend that to make that a permanent solution for a okay, so that's the issue. So again, in general we say tovel the whole thing and make sure it dries out, and then that won't be a problem. But as everyone mentioned before, it is a very special mitzvah, again, one of those many mitzvahs that should make us aware that even our, as I mentioned at the outset, even our food, even our dishes, even everything has a kedusha to it. Even our food, even our cups, even our forks and our everything. And as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago in the drasha, so you could see that from the bracha, asher kiddushan of a mitzvah, your mekadishas, very incredible concept that our forks, knives, spoons, everything has a realm of kedusha to it. So, as Mr. Freeman was saying before, it's something that we should all appreciate and take advantage of. Okay, Mirtz Hashem, next week or next time we get together, we'll cover a new topic, and that is Hechsher Kalim. That is, again, and this dovetails what we were just talking about. Come back from Midyan, so you got something, so it has to be tovled, as we just learned, but you got kasher it first. Now, this comes up a lot, you know, whether you're buying something from a non-Jew, or again, unfortunately, things go wrong in the house sometimes, or for Pesach, right? So, Mir Sashem, that will be the next topic.
Is there a minimum? I think you were first.
Well, I didn't see your hand.
I was going to say that we had learned that from people that accidentally have put cell phones in water, that if you dip it, immerse it in alcohol, that
really?
It dries it out.
That's
so
interesting.
I would think that would work, that if you
That's very
immerse
interesting.
Something and then you were worried that the electrical stuff got wet,
right.
if you poured alcohol onto that part,
the only
it
thing
would help dry it.
Yeah, but like usually
I
these things are big.
I'm still going to put it on for a while, but still,
yeah.
if you've got worried
Really?
About
if you just
the
pour
ground,
alcohol on it?
Right.
That's very interesting.
It helps dry things.
Anybody want
you
to take...
You blow dry it. You could blow dry it. But
no,
the alcohol worked for the cell phone, so...
Wow.
That's very interesting. So you just splash alcohol on it.
Well, right. This was actually to immerse it in alcohol, but if you don't...
Right.
You could just
yeah,
pour
see,
it
that's
into
what I'm saying.
The
like an urn is a kind of big
no,
to
but
get
if you're worried
immersive.
That it got into some sort of the guts of the germ.
Right,
permanent,
right, right, right. right.
Just pour
that's very
it.
Interesting.
I think that's one of the...
That's
you
very
know,
interesting.
You already got the water in there. You want to talk about
the alcohol. Lowering the person's body temperature by using alcohol as the alcohol
right.
dries faster.
That's interesting. Okay.
Is there a minimum number of time that the vessel needs to be submerged?
No, that's what I said. Once. Once
I mean,
well. Time? No. As long as you got the entire surface, that will do it.
Did you see the LA Times today? On the front page, there's an article about OU.